Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 24th, 2015. Today we're joined by our co-host, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great, great. Well, D.R., it is graduation season, and the President of the United States is often called upon to give a commencement address at some of our national academies. He sort of cycles from one to the next. This past week, the president gave the commencement address at the Coast Guard Academy. And he spoke about climate change. They touted it in advance, and he addressed the issue. And tell me, what did the president say to the Coasties at the Coast Guard Academy?
Well, it was actually a great speech in the sense they discussed the risk that climate change will pose to national security. He discussed the physics and the science of climate change. He pointed out that people who deny climate change and reject all the evidence showing how much of a hazard it will be to national security are essentially engaged in dereliction of duty. And it was a strongly received speech. He pointed out that, you know, America can lead, that America needs to lead, that he's been trying over the course of his administration to lead, but that the graduates of the Coast Guard Academy will be on the front lines of a climate crisis. So it was a great speech, although obviously on social media, people raised the issue of the incongruity of Obama delivering the speech so soon after basically giving the thumbs up to Shell to start drilling in the Arctic.
And just to put a fine point on it, he said, it's a dereliction of duty not to act, right? Mm-hmm. He said that exactly to the Coast Guard Academy graduates. And mm-hmm. having just not acted, right, or mm-hmm. stayed with the standard business as usual of letting Royal Dutch Shell sail off to drill in the Arctic, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and a lot of the criticism echoed a criticism that the nationally syndicated columnist and Washington Post writer Eugene Robertson made in a column that was published 2 days before Obama's speech, in which Eugene Robertson brought up previous statements Obama had made about climate change, and then writes, quote, "Why then would the Obama administration give Royal Dutch Shell permission to move ahead with plans for Arctic offshore drilling? Put simply, if the problem is that we're burning too much oil, why give the green light to a process that could produce another million barrels of the stuff per day, just ready to be set alight?" And then Eugene Robertson concludes, "If we don't take a stand in the Arctic, then where? And if not now, when?" And it was interesting because this column itself was published just a couple of days after the kayaktivists, as they are known in Seattle, basically demonstrated and basically, you know, tried to make it clear to Shell that they are not going to tolerate from what my understanding is, according to Seattle or Washington State regulations, a legally dubious effort to try to start drilling up there.
Let's just bring everybody up to speed, right? In the last 10 days or so, a federal group called the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management gave to the company Royal Dutch Shell permission to do exploratory drilling way up north in the Arctic Ocean. So mm-hmm. Royal Dutch Shell now has this huge yellow-colored monstrosity of a drilling platform, a floating drilling platform. And it happens that Shell wants to use the port of Seattle as kind of a home base, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
mm-hmm.
the home base, and this is all relevant because now it's springtime in the Arctic and all whatever ice there is left is melted, and so they can go search for it. And yep. that's why Seattle comes up, Royal Dutch Shell, the Arctic drilling. Obama has allowed this terrible thing to happen. And as mm-hmm. you said, in Seattle, people with their kayaks all paddled out to stop this, to protest having this monstrous thing in their harbor and letting it sail away, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the subtext for all this. But the real question is, why would Obama allow, you know, on the one hand say it's a dereliction of duty not to act, but at the same time allow Royal Dutch Shell to go off and find new oil?
Mm-hmm. And it is a good question. I've raised the issue before of whether or not there was enough pressure put on Obama to tell Shell no, as the
As
demonstrators said.
the hashtag goes, right?
Exactly, and especially with all the stories that had come out prior to this point about Shell being two-faced on the climate issue, stories that have appeared in The Guardian since the beginning of this year. There was a story just a few days ago pointing out that Shell essentially is, while they're claiming that climate change is a problem, they're still saying that they are going to basically drill baby drill and spill baby spill and essentially kill baby kill at will baby will, so to speak. So with all the thing that so all the stuff that was known in the public record about Shell being a rogue player in this game, why there was not more of a mobilization to basically make it clear to President Obama that any sort of action greenlighting Shell's drilling in the Arctic would not be tolerated by the American people.
Well, it's
So.
an interesting question how this thing snuck through, right? I think that if the 350.org people had not picked up on KXL, Keystone XL would have slipped through. This thing somehow got through, and all of a sudden it's a done deal, and all you're left paddling your kayak around a drilling rig. But I guess, I mean, part of the connection here is a report in The Guardian. Of course, it's the Guardian newspaper in England, guardian.com, I guess, and they have reported on a recent study that basically estimates the cost of fossil fuel pollution, right? And they claim to have very robust estimates of the cost of fossil fuel pollution. And if you treat that cost of fossil fuel pollution as a subsidy, that is to say, the oil companies get to sell this stuff and the pollution happens and nobody pays for it, that's essentially a subsidy to the oil company. It works out to be something like $10 million a minute that the fossil fuel industry is subsidized by.
$10 million a minute on a daily basis, according to the estimate by the International Monetary Fund, according to the Guardian. The IMF calls the revelation shocking, said the figure is an extremely robust estimate of the true cost of fossil fuels, and that the $5.3 trillion subsidy estimated for 2015 is greater than the total health spending of all the world's governments. And I think it was Kyle Kuzlinski, I apologize if I mispronounced his name, who hosts the Secular Talk online broadcast, who said that the fossil fuel industry, as a result of this study, should be considered the biggest welfare queens in the world. That's that if people talk about, people mooching off states and mooching off the government, the fossil fuel industry are they're the biggest moochers and layabouts going around today.
Well, the if you read the article, it says that the actual cash transfer to the oil industry is about 5% of that total number, which is only something like a $500,000 a minute, right, to fossil fuel. And the majority of the cost comes in these what are typically called externalities, these things that there's damage being done that no one is taking is being is paying for, and eventually someone's going to pay for. And I guess, I mean, in that same vein, so there's $10 million a minute to subsidize the damage and the continued existence of the fossil fuel industry. And out in California, in Santa Barbara, in the most beautiful place in the world, where the weather's warm and the beer is cold and the weather's warm, they still had an oil spill. Right? They still broke a pipeline coming in from some offshore drilling platform and have soiled the beaches of Santa Barbara again, right?
And it seems to be unclear as to how much oil has been spilled, because we're getting these estimates from the oil company itself, the pipeline
I believe
operator
that one.
itself. And there are some independent observations. So it appears that nobody really knows how much oil has been spilled. The Los Angeles Times reported that Plains Pipeline, which is the company responsible for the pipe that burst, has accumulated 175 safety and maintenance infractions over the course of the past decade. That they're basically, profoundly sloppy, to say the least. And that now there is this sort of aggressive effort to try to clean things up, but you can ultimately never clean things up. And as the story goes, it proves once again that when there's a solar spill, it's just considered a good day.
Well, that reminds me that the if we rewind back to the Royal Dutch Shell exploration, I have seen multiple reports that say there's an estimate of the chance of a oil spill in the Arctic from this drilling, and the estimate of the probability of an oil spill is that there's a 75% chance there'll be an oil spill. Did you see that number anywhere?
Yes, I did see that. In fact, it was reported at the time when Obama gave the green light to Shell that there are other major oil companies. I think Total Oil was, which I believe is a French company, that they're leery about drilling in the Arctic because it's so sensitive and so risky, and it's hard to do a rescue operation. I think there was some story saying that the Coast Guard or another such organization is basically saying that they don't have the equipment to do an effective rescue if something goes really wrong. So it seems like Shell is walking on eggshells, so to speak, trying to get this pulled off. It just seems that, and the sad thing is, though, is that there was a report a while ago, about a couple of years ago, saying that Shell internally had said that by the end of this century, they believe that solar will be the dominant energy source in the United States. And you'd figure, why won't they take their resources and sort of try to move the future forward? There was an interview that Brad Friedman conducted with Seattle City Councilor Mike O'Brien, who was one of the protesters, one of the kayaktivists, and he pointed out that Shell has so much resources financially that they could easily be investing in wind, easily be investing in solar, easily be investing in alternative fuels. They could be competing with Tesla if they wanted to, and yet they still continue to be dependent on dirty energy sources. It makes no business sense whatsoever. However.
Well, let me tell you my theory. Okay? So there is in the climate world, there are efforts to reduce the demand side, to reduce the emissions, right? Drive less, insulate your home. That reduces the emissions. There has to be an equally robust effort to reduce the demand side, sorry, to reduce the supply side. So the production of these things. And this is where the Guardian thing about keep it on the ground, right? The Guardian newspaper's campaign to keep the fossil fuel in the ground comes from is that you have to reduce the supply of fossil fuels as well. So I've got my aluminum hat on. Okay, and Jade Helm 15 notwithstanding, here's my conspiracy theory. Okay, the TPP, right? We need to talk about the TPP. Has within it a mechanism, this investor state dispute thing, right? Where if a company thinks that the United States has damaged their profits by passing a carbon tax, they can sue for the damage, what the company thought they were going to make. Okay, once you're in the world where you can sue for potential profits based on what you would have sold, then there's a perverse incentive for Shell or Mobil to identify as much oil in the ground as they can. And then when the carbon tax is passed, Royal Dutch Shell says, "Oh, look, I got all this oil in the Chukchi Sea. You won't let me sell it. Now you have to pay me for it." So, in a sense, by just discovering the oil in these terrible places, all of a sudden Shell owns it, it's on their ledger, they get to be paid for it under this crazy mechanism we've talked about before within the TPP, even if there's a carbon tax. So the United States is going to pay out money for these guys just discovering oil.
And
Is
it
that a
goes.
crazy theory? Should I move to Texas and live in a Walmart or something?
It,
Or
it's not a it's not a crazy theory for two reasons. Number one, if I recall correctly, the CEO of Royal Dutch Shell said specifically that they do not believe in the concept of a stranded asset. Earlier this year, there was a speech that the CEO gave about climate change and the need for the oil companies to engage on this issue, where they said that they reject the concept of a stranded asset. And what you're saying could tie into that basically, if they say that we are not allowed to develop this, therefore it's not really a stranded asset. It is simply an asset that we're simply not allowed to maximize. And number two, tying into the TPP, there was a recent controversy that emerged on May the 20th that raised red flags about people who were concerned about the TPP and the way it can be used to sort of get rid of domestic laws that are perceived to be infringing upon certain vested interests. And the report was from the Associated Press that a House subcommittee voted on May the 20th to get rid of labels on packages of meat that say where the animals were born, raised, and slaughtered. It was the House Agriculture Committee that voted to repeal a country of origin labeling law for beef, pork, pork and poultry just 2 days after the World Trade Organization ruled against parts of the law. The labels tell consumers which countries the meat is from, and the World Trade Organization ruled that the U.S. labels put Canadian and Mexican livestock at a disadvantage. So therefore, as a result of this World Trade Organization ruling, United States laws are being changed to accommodate people who are complaining about the law, and that raises that ties into the concern that and climate hawks have that if the United States passes a fee and dividend or carbon tax bill, under the terms of the TPP, entities affected by such a carbon tax bill can basically use their pull to get you know some governing body to say this must go, and therefore, and then from there the United States changes its own laws to accommodate the TPP demands, and therefore effectively nullifies the carbon pricing policy.
I mean, there's so much underneath this TPP thing. I hope our listeners have been following the debate. So, because the TPP is this trade, the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership, it's been all over the news lately, Fast Track Authority, it's all over the internet if you go looking for it. But one of the things that I found particularly interesting and wanted to make sure that we recognized, and it, the germ of the idea is in a speech from Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, who recognized, you know, so of course, Sheldon Whitehouse, God bless him, may his name be blessed, gives a speech each week on the Senate floor about climate change. And he just had his 100th presentation on climate change to the U.S.
Senate. Yeah, the time to wake up.
Time to wake up. In the 99th speech that he gave, which is now last week, he pointed out very clearly that the trade provisions that are being discussed under the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, are completely disconnected from climate change issues. And the emissions and all the stuff that goes on needs to be included. Climate needs to be included in that treaty. And that we are negotiating the COP21, which will happen in Paris. We've talked about it before. This is the climate treaty that will be signed in Paris. I mean, that is intimately bound up with the economic negotiations that should be involved in the TPP, and just further emphasize the fact that this trade deal needs to be transparent. We need to know how it's being negotiated so that climate hawks can see exactly what is in there and whether or not it is a good trade deal for the planet. Much the same way that I'm sure the negotiations in Paris are going to be very public. We're going to know every time a comma gets changed in the Paris negotiations. We should have the same level of scrutiny on whatever these guys are deciding on the TPP.
Yes, it was a brilliant speech where Sheldon Whitehouse essentially noted that, you know, where is the logic in trying to push for a binding agreement in Paris and yet at the same time try to push for a trade agreement that will essentially stab in the back and in the front this agreement in Paris that you know you it's like one hand not knowing what the other hand is doing. And and even though this speech, Sheldon Whitehouse's speech, was given before Obama's address, commencement address, it is essentially a pre-refutation of what Obama said, because from this perspective the TPP constitutes a dereliction of duty by the Obama administration on the climate issue.
I mean much as I honor and respect what Obama has done, I mean, in the last 6 or 8 months, he seems to have gone off the rails in terms of consistency in addressing climate change. There are some obvious things. This between the TPP and this the Arctic drilling, it's not a good thing.
And it raises the issue again, and this is an issue that Joe Rome raised years ago, particularly involving David Axelrod. Who are the advisors in Obama's ear, and do they have climate in mind? I mean, Joe Rome for years noted that David Axelrod did not prioritize the climate issue, and you do wonder if there are a lot of these sort of you know, beltway type of hacks in Obama's ear who basically put climate way, 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 way down on the list of priorities to be concerned
about.
Trade
way, way, way up.
Exactly.
Well, Niar, as this story unfolds, we intend to be there explaining it as best we can, right?
Definitely.
So let's everyone should know that we'll put up links to most of what we talked about. We covered a lot of ground tonight. I hope I can get all these links in. We'll just links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.wordpress.com. Please leave a comment. Tell us what you think. You can find the podcast on Facebook at /massclimateaction. Please like us. Please share us. You can listen to us directly on your iPhone using Stitcher. Please review us. It pushes us up. I mean, any action that you take increases the visibility of our show, and hopefully you think more people ought to listen to us. You can find us on iTunes. Same story, it's Mass Climate Action. Subscribe there, review us. It's all good. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a meaningful price on carbon pollution. Thanks, DR.
Thanks, definitely.
And thanks to everyone for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.